This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program for the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. Want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
This is Walter Koenig, Chekhov from Star Trek, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Risk is our business.
It's like nothing we've dealt with before.
By golly, Jim, I'm beginning to think I can cure a rainy day.
I can't change the laws of physics.
Now in standard orbit, sir.
Welcome, everyone, to Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated podcast that covers the original and new cast of Captain Kirk and the Enterprise. I am Ken Tripp.
And I am Zach Moore, and this week we do another of our round downs across the episodes and movies and look at the Star Trek guest stars that made it in Hollywood as their careers expanded over the years.
Yeah, you know, looking back, we found quite a bit of celebrities that did very well and had long careers in a very volatile industry. To qualify a little bit on this list, though, Zach, we looked at successful careers, not necessarily those who were A-listers.
Yeah, this is important because we don't want to upset those celebrities, you know, listening to our podcast, Ken.
Well, that's an excellent point. We certainly don't want anyone to be upset. As you know, their agents will be calling us and creating all sorts of trouble. And speaking of that, have you spoken to your agent recently?
Not recently. You know, once Chris Jones agreed to the favored nations clause that ensures if one of us gets an increase or an opportunity, we both get it. I was good.
Oh, that's excellent. That's important. I feel better now that I can receive and earn, you know, rewards based on your, our work.
Anyway. Well. Well, time to leave orbit and set course down our episodes and explore the human stars from the Star Trek galaxy.
And we're starting with Where No Man Has Gone Before. And the two guest stars in this one were Gary Lockwood and Sally Kellerman. And they both did very, very well in Hollywood. Gary Lockwood more short-term afterwards, but Sally Kellerman had a pretty long career afterwards. What are your thoughts there, Zach?
So Gary Lockwood, I best know him from 2001, The Space Odyssey, which was almost a contemporary of Star Trek. As you said, he hit it big kind of immediately afterward and then kind of faded off as time went on. And it's interesting because, 2001, The Space Odyssey was made just a couple years after Where No Man Has Gone Before. And the special effects are just blowing away, right? So it's interesting. You see contemporary Gary Lockwood from the 60s on Star Trek. And then in 2001, you're like, wow, that's the same guy in the same time period. This was going on in the movie. So to me, it's just seeing him in both of those just kind of shows what a quantum leap in effects and production value that 2001 was. But I think he's a great actor. He's very natural. You know, he seems like he's just, doing his thing. As I've said, Where No Man Has Gone Before is my favorite episode, the original series. And the guest stars are a big part of it. They add to a realness of the world. So Lockwood, as far as Sally Kellerman goes, I know her best from MASH, the movie. Hot Lips O'Houlihan. and I don't really know much else that she did after that. Ken, what else did she go on to do after MASH?
Probably the most recent bigger movie, and it's not that recent anymore, was Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield. She was the female lead in that as the professor, but she has been in a lot of films. So if you look up in her database, you'll see she pops up quite often. I saw her in Las Vegas, and what a handsome, dignified woman she is. She has a very distinct voice that sounds very sophisticated when she speaks. And that's, I think, why she probably played the professor that she did in that movie. So, yeah, Sally's been big in the 70s. You would see her on a lot of TV shows, guest starring and so forth, and then in a lot of movie roles as well. So she did very well, and she's still around. Both Gary Lockwood and Sally Kellerman are still around. And we, like I said, we saw them in Las Vegas. Sally, looking good. Gary Well, he's still funny.
That guy, he can tell a story. Like, if there's anyone that has an ego perhaps as big as William Shatner, Gary Lockwood does. But I don't know if Lockwood has the goods to back it up, so to speak. You know what I'm saying? Doesn't have the trophy shelf to brag about like Shatner does. But, man, those guys, they're funny guys, man, I'll tell you.
Yeah, they are. They are. He did a great job, and he was enjoyable. Yeah, and you know, when you go to these conventions and you see them in the autograph room, they're a lot of fun just to talk with. They'll strike up a conversation with you.
Right. It's crazy though. I mean, these guys were the special guest stars of, at the time, you know, the first episode of Star Trek, of the new era of Star Trek, the William Shatner era of Star Trek, and that was over 50 years ago, and they're still coming out talking, going to conventions, telling about stories, and as you said, they're still with us, and that's great. That they are still around and still, you know, able to go out and do these things and have the recall and be as lively and engaging as they are. Because, you know, we saw that panel and I don't know, sometimes it got a little out of control, but for the most part, it was a very entertaining panel seeing the two of them. And hey, let's not forget, Sally Carolman was an Oscar nominee for her role on MASH. So that's big time Academy Award nomination right there.
Yeah. She, like I said, she's a classy woman, beautiful, dignified. Great actress and just a great person. Just from talking to her a little bit that I did when I was there, I thought she came across very, very well and just had this very, I don't know what the austere, she was very, very proper, but very kind, very polite. So yeah, a lot of fun. So are we ready to move on?
Yep. Let's move on to What Are Little Girls Made Of? Now, this is another kind of contemporary stardom, much like Gary Lockwood had in the 60s. Ted Cassidy played Ruck. He, at the same time, or just beforehand, he was playing Lurch on The Addams Family. So I mean, he would kind of typecast as the muscle, right? Awesome voice, though.
Well, his voice was used a lot throughout the series, wasn't it? And then I think, you would see him pop up quite a bit. And he lasted quite a while in Hollywood. I mean, he was always the big guy. There was no doubt about it. And he was typecast. But I would say that his career was, quote unquote, successful overall.
Yeah, I mean, he unfortunately died, I believe it was in the late 70s, was it? I mean, he didn't live very long. It might have been, and this is just my conjecture, you know, sometimes, you know, when you're a bigger guy, you know, just tall. I mean, the guy, gosh, he's probably almost 7 feet tall, right? So, I mean, sometimes, you know, arteries and you have heart problems, you're that big. I know Andre the Giant had similar issues. So I'm not entirely sure why he passed away at a younger age, but a great loss because, man, he was such a cool genre guy. Just his voice. Star Trek took advantage of it several times. He was, as I've said before, talking about Ted Cassidy, he was the voice of Godzilla in the Godzilla cartoon. Why they chose a voice actor instead of a sound effect is beyond me. But again, I will again refer you all to the 1970s Godzilla cartoon where Godzilla sounds like this. Like, that's literally what it sounds like, guys. Go check it out. I've said it before. I'll say it again. Until I know you've all checked it out for yourselves, I'm going to keep saying it. But Ted Cassidy, man. And what an imposing guy. Like, I think if Ted Cassidy, had lived a little longer, he might have been a great, you know, James Bond henchman, right? Kind of like, you know, Dave Bautista is today or, you know, Richard Kiley was. Richard Kiel.
Yeah.
Richard Kiel was as Jaws, you know, back in the day. Just a very imposing, memorable guy. And a lot of his early days were spent on Star Trek.
They sure were. He did well. All right, let's move on to Miri. Are you familiar with Michael J. Pollard?
I am familiar with him because, listen up, guys, because he was Mr. Mixes Piddalick on Superboy, the TV series. There was a Superman TV show called Superboy in the 80s and 90s. Now, it is the forgotten Superman property. Everybody knows, well, I would like to think everybody knows Smallville, because, you know.
They bet it damn well know Smallville.
Listen to this show.
That's right. If we have to start taking a ride out to talk to these people, we will.
So there's Smallville in the 2000s. Before that was Lois and Clark with Dean Cain and Terry Hatcher. But before that, and after the Christopher Reeve films, there was Superboy. It ran for 4 seasons in syndication. And, Michael J. Pollard was Mr. Mixes Piddalick on that. And he was just this goofy fifth dimension imp that came in and bothered Superboy. So that's what I know him from, Ken.
Yeah, you know, I didn't see the show, but what a perfect cast. That was cast perfectly. I know the character from the comic book and his attributes. And I was like, man, that is spot on. But if you've seen Scrooge, he plays a homeless guy who freezes to death. And he also was in one of my favorite movies called Roxanne with Steve Martin. And he plays Andy, who's a firefighter in that. You know, just kind of this low-key guy and, you know, volunteer firefighter. Had some of the better lines and just a few scenes here and there, but he really stole the show. So he's a very talented guy, but again, a very distinct voice, very distinct appearance. You'd know him once you saw him because he's been around for quite a while. And he did a really good job in those films. And he, you know, I know a lot of people don't like Miri very much, but he did a good job in that role.
Well, speaking of Miri, the actress who played the title character, Kim Darby, went on right after Star Trek, again, contemporary stardom immediately afterward. She went on to be in True Grit with John Wayne. So that's big time, I'd say.
I would say so, yeah. I don't know much about Kim Darby beyond that, but...
I know she was in one of the Halloween movies, one of the later ones, like post Jamie Lee Curtis era. So,
oh, that's too bad,
yeah,
I guess.
So yeah, but hey, you know, still, movie with John Wayne, put that on your resume. Hey, George Takei, he's in one too. So.
And that's the only thing I know that he did outside of Star Trek. So there we are. And of course, I was just in Thailand filming our version of the Green Berets. So I, you know,
indeed,
it all comes together.
Indeed, you were, sir. So moving on to our next episode, the Corbin Knight Maneuver. Now, there's been a lot of talk about Ron Howard recently taking over the Han Solo film. See what I did there?
Right.
But his brother, Clint Howard, has been right there with him all along the way. And now he was the human face of Baylock at the end. Overdubbed, by the way, by someone else. That wasn't Clint Howard's voice at the end. It's very unsettling to see like a child with an adult's voice. And I mean, that was kind of the point. And a little cheesy, but I think it worked pretty well. And let's face it, guys, he's a weird looking guy. He's just kind of a weird looking guy. Has a memorable face. And it worked well to be, you know, an alien. I don't know which one was scarier. Can Baylock the puppet or Baylock the Clint Howard version?
I think it was the latter, I have to say.
Oh, boy. I'll just say this. He's probably happy that his brother went on to such famous success, or he might not still be in the public consciousness the way he is, because he cameos in a lot of Ron Howard movies. He's like, you know, he was in an episode of Deep Space Nine, past tense, when Sisko, Bashir, and Dax go back in time. I know he was in, like, you know, The Water Boy, right? I mean, he just pops up in a lot of stuff, probably because, you know, of his brother. I'm just saying.
So, I remember, I think Ron Howard's first movie was Night Shift, and he had a small role in that. And then from there, you're right, he was always popping up. It didn't matter what it was, Puddle 13.
Right.
His brother took care of him, I guess, from that point of view. But Clint can act, there's no doubt about it. And he was he's done well. And boy, you know, I mean, his brother has certainly been, you know, I guess a triple A-lister from you know, once Opie Taylor and then Richie Cunningham, and now look at him. It's incredible just to see how far his star has risen. And he pulled Clint along with him, which is what good brothers do, I guess.
And I believe Clint Howard went on to play a Fraying in the Enterprise episode Acquisition, which I love so much. So. But moving on.
Court Martial.
Tracy Rodriguez. Now, this is an actor I'm not that familiar with, Ken. I think this might be a generational thing, but... What are your thoughts on Percy Rodriguez?
Well, Percy Rodriguez, who played Commodore Stone in Court Martial, he went on mostly because of his voice. Now, he did a lot of TV and some movies, but what he is really famous for, Zach, is in the 70s and 80s, he had this deep voice, and he would do movie trailers. And his most famous one was for Jaws.
Oh.
And if you listen to the YouTube version, there's a 2 or 3 minute, you know, one that they ran in the theaters, and it's just incredible. And Jaws being my favorite movie of all time, you know, I've dug into this film and have seen some interviews with Percy Rodriguez. And it was interesting because he talks about how they first wanted him to do it, and he convinces him to do it this way, more subtle and so much more imposing. So his voice, like James Earl Jones, very distinct, very deep. And it can bring a lot of thrills, chills to you. So he did a lot of movies in the 70s and 80s. And like I said, if you YouTube his name and you look at some of the voices and some of the trailers that he did, for some of the folks that are you know, a little older, not necessarily have to be as old as I am, but if you saw a lot of movies in the 80s or you're in the theater, you would know his voice instantly just by going back and listening to it. So, but check out that Jaws trailer on YouTube.
I will. I didn't know Jaws was your favorite movie of all time, Ken. That's interesting.
It is my favorite movie of all time. Yes.
I recently saw Jaws on the water. Alamo Drafthouse, this thing called Jaws.
I was so jealous I saw that. Yeah.
So they have this thing, Tangent, Standard Orbit Tangent.
Here we go.
Alamo Drafthouse, which is a popular a food and beverage movie house. I guess it's the best way to describe it. In Texas, I don't know if they exist outside the Alamo. Of course, referencing the Alamo from Texas. Remember the Alamo? So they put on lots of special presentations about films at certain times and tie into certain things. And anyway, they have this thing called Jaws on the Water, and they have it in Austin, the capital of Texas. I love going to Austin. I go there a lot. So went up there, watched it on a lake in Austin. They give you an inner tube. They give you, it's not cheap. Okay, guys, but it's all about the experience. So I have this giant inner tube now, like, that I'm going to just put in my storage unit because I don't want to deflate it, but it's really cool. And I'm going to bring it whenever I go to the beach or whatever. So you get an inner tube. It's got Jaws on it. They project Jaws on this giant screen. You're in the water with, like, you know, hundreds of people just watching it. So it's a very just visceral experience because you're on the water. And then they have scuba divers, like, swim around and mess with you and, you know, during the movie. So it's a very cool interactive experience, and I really enjoyed it. And if you haven't seen Jaws, I don't know why you haven't seen Jaws, because it is one of the greatest films of all time. Spielberg's probably arguably the greatest director of all time for many reasons. But anyway, that's the one that put Spielberg on the map. It made modern blockbusters, so definitely Jaws. And hey, maybe as many people wouldn't have gone to see it if not for Percy Rodriguez's awesome trailer narration. I'll have to check that out for sure, Ken.
Yeah, definitely. And it was made here in New England, on Martha's Vineyard, and boy, it had quite an impact on me and my family, and of course, a ton of other movie directors. And there's a great documentary called The Shark Is Still Working, if you ever want to catch it. And it's got Bryan Singer, Kevin Smith, all these different, Paul Rodriguez, you name it, all these different directors who got into making movies because of Jaws and its impact. So that's the name of that tangent. We'll go on, but that's why I had to list Percy Rodriguez, because of his impact. But in fairness, he was very, very popular in that time. More behind the scenes than in front of the camera, but impactful nonetheless.
Well, you want to talk about an awesome voice. Let's move on to our next guest star from Space Seed, Ricardo Montalban. I mean, what can be said about Ricardo Montalban? The guy's an icon, and I know him best outside of this from his role in the Planet of the Apes movies, the original Planet of the Apes series. He was in two. He was in Escape from the Planet of the Apes and Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, and he helps out Caesar, the child of Cornelius and Zero. See, I'm a nerd on other things too, guys. It's just, and he has just a nice, small role, but a memorable role. And then, of course, for the greater world, I'm sure they know him best from Fantasy Island, right, Ken?
Fantasy Island, definitely. Then he got kind of a rebirth in popularity too after Star Trek II. I think people didn't realize just how talented an actor he was, and you know, he started popping up in all kinds of little bit parts here and there. But I remember him from Naked Gun. I remember him from the Spy Kids movies.
The Spy Kids. I remember that.
Yeah, he was around. Yeah. He was around.
No, I remember
that.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, yeah, and he's just it's funny too. If you see interviews with him, he is such a great speaker, very eloquent, and you know, he's just got a very strong character about him, and he just draws you in. So as The Wrath of Khan is many people's favorite Star Trek movie, it's because of Ricardo Montalban. So his success too. He was also big. He was a spokesperson for Chrysler for years in the late 70s and 80s. His tagline was like rich Corinthian leather, and no one could say, I wouldn't even attempt to imitate it. No one could say it like he could, but it just was like, yeah, that's an elegant car just because of the way he said it. It was perfect. So yeah, he did very, very well.
Yeah, and he was a multi-talented guy. I mean, he could dance. I think he could he sing too, maybe? I don't know. He's just a multifaceted guy, like a five-tool player, as they say in baseball, you know, just across the board in entertainment. So just a great talent, and very happy to have him part out of the Star Trek family. And more iconic than, you know, most of the rest of these guys, because he returned as his character on the big screen, which no one else did, you know, outside of the original cast and crew themselves. That's as a returning guest star in the movie. So Ricardo Montalban, man, the best con, but we'll get to the other con later on. The next episode, episode we'll talk about is Aaron of Mercy, John Colicos, which we just talked about. Aaron of Mercy, Standard Orbit 179. I had your sash. with our Trek FM content manager, Justin Oster. Fun conversation there.
This may be the very first time you remembered an episode well, number. I am impressed.
It was the last
I know it was
one.
Just last week. I know that.
It was the last one. So
I got to have a little fun with you there.
As I look over to like, okay, this is 180, so last week must have been 179. But yeah, so we talk a lot about his character core in that episode, and I kind of define the Klingons moving on forward from there. But, you know, John Colicos, to me, I know him best as Core, and then he returned as, you know, as Core three times in Deep Space Nine. But outside of that, I know him as the original Baltar on the original Battlestar Galactica. So before the Dr. Bashir doppelganger played Baltar on the new Battlestar Galactica, there was John Colicos on the old one. So,
oh, yeah. You know, he was a big-time character. Actor always played the heavy bad guy, always did it well too. So I remember, you know, he guest starred on every show you can think of, and anytime he could land, like he did with Battlestar Galactica for a season, he took advantage of it. But yeah, very, very distinct actor, and very, very common growing up with him. And obviously he was kind of typecast into the villainous roles, but dang it, man, he played him so well. I mean, he had a look about him, a very distinct approach to things, and he just, yeah, I really like John Colicos. I got a lot out of listening to you and Justin last week, just talking about that he was slated to be in a number of Star Trek episodes, and, you know, the fact that that didn't happen is probably a blessing and a curse for him and whatnot, but he was always a very strong, very active working actor. You know, he was always busy. And that's in Hollywood. Hey, if you're not an A-lister, you know, you just keep driving, you keep going. And he had a pretty good career.
I'll tell you who else had a really good career. Joan Collins from City on the Edge of Forever. This is one of her earlier roles. I'm not sure exactly of her filmography, what she had done before this, but obviously to me, this is what put her on the map. And you know, I know my parents used to tell me stories, Ken. Perhaps you can inform me that she was in Dynasty back in the day. That was like a big deal in the 80s. But tell me about the 80s, Uncle Ken.
Okay, Zach, I shall. Yes, Dynasty was, it was ABC's answer to Dallas, is what it was. So it was a soap opera, a primetime soap opera, and she was the lead role. And before that, though, she made a number of films in Britain. She was very, very popular in England for many, many years after Star Trek, and made a lot of films over there. And then, you know, really hit it big. And I know her her sister is a huge author, and I'm trying to remember her name, and it escapes me now, but you know, between the two of them, just ridiculous amounts of fame and wealth. And obviously she was very well known for Dynasty, and she did a few things afterwards as well. So yeah, she was a big name.
Yeah, and, you know, and she still, you know, appears on, you know, I know they had the Captain's Collection Star Trek DVD. She appeared on that with Shatner, you know, talking about City on the Edge of Forever. So she's still around talking about Star Trek. It was the 30th anniversary, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, some of these stars, they get so big, like, okay, I never want to talk about that again. But, you know, even though she had a lot of mainstream success, she was happy to talk about Star Trek. Still is, and she's still with us as well. So
yeah, and you know, it's a good story in Hollywood too. I mean, she was a very attractive woman. There's no doubt about it. And she was able to take on that matriarch role in Dynasty. And you know, fair or unfair, there's not a lot of actresses that have a lot of longevity. Once they start to age and so forth, it's not like the male counterparts. And she did well. I mean, she continued on, graceful, mature, and you know, I thought was always very very beautiful woman. But she could act. She had a great talent. Still does. And that's one of the nice things is the longevity. Because when you look through this list and you look through a lot of the names that we're going through, we're talking mostly about guys. And, you know, there were some women, you know, that I didn't mention because their careers might have been like Jill Ireland. You know, she was a big actress back in that timeline. But, you know, after like 1973 or 74, a couple of Charles Bronson movies, nothing. You know what I mean? So it's nice to see that Joan Collins had a very long, distinguished career. So moving on to the Apple, I pulled out a name you didn't recognize, huh, Zach?
No, David Soul. I'm not familiar with David Soul.
Yeah, David Soul. He was big in the 70s. He was the co-star, along with Paul Michael Glazer, of Starsky and Hutch.
Oh, so was he Starsky or was he Hutch?
He was okay. Hutch. He was Ken Hutchinson. Oh, Hutchinson. Yes, he was Hutch. Yes, he was the blonde one. And for those of us that grew up in that timeline, that was a great show, a lot of fun. You know, they had the high-powered sports car, and I'm sure you've seen the mock movie they made with Ben Stiller and Owen Wilson.
Oh, so David Soul was Owen Wilson.
Yes, and actually, they both showed up at the end of the movie, remember?
I never saw that. It did not interest me. Starsky watched the movie.
Oh, you never saw it. Okay, well, you knew about it. Okay, so anyway. Yeah, they actually make cameos at the end, okay. the original folks. So, yeah, the movie was terrible. But the TV show was a lot of fun. And also, David Soul had a number one hit single in the late 70s called Don't Give Up on Us. And it was a pretty different ballad. You know, it was an okay song, I guess. But he was big time. And then in the 80s, he was making a lot of movies of the weeks, which were popular back then. I remember one of them, essentially, it was World War III, and he played the key role of an army officer facing off the Russians in Alaska. So, yeah, he did very well and unrecognizable.
Yeah,
in
I was
going
to say, even if I was familiar with Starsky and Hutch, I doubt I would recognize him because, you know, that makeup and hair they had on the aliens there. Now, he played Makura, who was
right.
Probably not the main guy they were talking to with, like, the eyes of all with the radio antenna sticking out of him, but, like, probably the second or third main person, you know,
he might have had three or four lines in the whole show, right. But it was kind of cool to
somewhere.
See that it was him. That's right. And, you know, a couple of big actors came out of some of the worst episodes. Anyway, so we move on. So the next one we have is a piece of the action. Are you familiar with Vic Tayback?
No, I'm going to guess he was one of the mob bosses, though.
He was the husky one with the deep voice. He was kind of the second guy that was brought in, okay. or the second mob boss, and very, very distinct. Anyway, in the 70s and 80s, he was part of a sitcom called Alice, and it was made from a movie called Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. And Vic Tayback played Mel from Mel's Diner, and you know that show. I don't know how many years it was on. It was just a so-so show, but he was very, very good in it.
Mel's
just,
Diner just, from American Graffiti?
Was that Mel's in American Graffiti? I don't know.
With Ron Howard and Clint Howard. See, it's all connected, Ken.
Okay. Was the Diners, was Mel's?
I think so. So
was it?
Someone will let us know in the comments, I'm sure. But anyway, I'm sorry to derail your...
It's been I haven't seen American Graffiti in 20 years, maybe. But at any rate, that was what he was big for. And, you know, and again, if you, you see him in Star Trek, and if you see him, you YouTube his name or whatever, very, very distinct character actor who did very, very well for many years.
Well, here's an interesting one. Charles Napier was in The Way to Eden. He played Adam. Which I love the end of The Way to Eden. You know, they get there, they eat the fruit, he dies, they show up, he has an apple in his hand, Spock looks down at Charles Napier's character, turns to Kirk and says, his name was Adam. It's like, okay, thank you, we get the biblical metaphor, right? He ate the apple, he's dead. But anyway, so he played a young, you know, hippie guy, looking for love and looking for Eden. And fast forward to what he's most famous for. He's most famous for these gruff general roles. I mean, he even played that same stereotype he became in Little Green Men years later on Deep Space Nine. But he's just an army guy. Like, I can't pinpoint. Maybe Rambo, I guess, would be the one that I would gravitate towards most. But yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He played that that congressman or whatever in Rambo Part 2. He was in Philadelphia. He played a good role there. But Austin Powers, he played a general.
Really? Okay, exactly. Oh.
That's where you're probably thinking. He also had a great role. I mean, he's been in a ton of movies.
Oh, he was in Silence of the Lambs too, right?
He was in Silence of the Lambs. That's right. He played the sheriff who did not have a nice ending at all. And he was such a great character. He was such a great character in that. It wasn't a large role, mm-hmm. but you know he came from Kentucky. I know that, and he had a very an interesting voice, a great speaking voice, you know, that any actor would love to have. And I think that's why he had a lot of those parts, because he was a big guy. But it's funny, when he would go the other direction and play a softer role, he actually pulled it off really, really well. And that's why I remember him so well from Silence of the Lambs, because I really felt bad when he didn't make it. But at any rate, he's done very well. Unfortunately, he died in 2011 or 2012.
Yeah, not too long ago, yeah.
Yeah, not too long ago at all, but I used to get, it was him and then this other actor that was in the first Rambo movie. Was it Brian Keith?
Brian Dennehy.
Brian Dennehy.
Shelby's dad in real life.
That's right. That's right. Shelby's dad in real life. And I used to get the two of them confused a lot.
Because of Rambo.
because of Rambo, yeah. but they kind of, you know, they had a similar look, not exactly the same, but similar, and also played a lot of the same kind of tough, authoritative characters throughout their career. So, mm-hmm. So that's Charles Nape.
Well, that's going to close the book on the original series proper. We're going to move on to the movies now. Star Trek The Motion Picture. Big guest star, Stephen Collins.
Yeah, Stephen Collins. So, you know,
I'll let you handle this one, Ken.
Yeah, what do you say? I don't like highlighting Stephen Collins. I don't think many of us do. But in fairness to what we're looking at here, he did go on to have a pretty decent career. I mean, he wasn't an A-lister by any means. And then Seventh Heaven, which was on for many, many seasons, he was obviously the star of that.
Right.
With another person we're going to be talking about.
Right.
Relatively soon. And then I think, you know, Persis Kahambada, who played Ilea, she made, I think, one or two movies afterwards and then died very, very young.
Yeah, she died in the early 90s. So, you know, right when, you know, I mean, I guess probably about 15 years after this movie. So, I mean, I'm sure she would have continued to have more opportunities as life had gone on. But she was, you know, extremely young. And she was, Miss Universe, I believe, when she was in Motion Picture or Miss India or something, you know, it was Miss something. So she was well known, and you know, famous story goes her shaving her head, crying about it. But hey, all kudos to her for going all the way for that part, you know, shaving her head like that, because beautiful head of hair all gone. But hey, she pulled off the ball look very well. So
she did. She was a very, very, very attractive woman, and from everything I've read about her too, just a very kind soul. And I'm trying to think, she made, it was like the kind of like a Delta Force type movie. I think it was like the Omega something or something along those lines. It was shortly afterwards they were running around and kind of paramilitary stuff. And I know that was one role she had.
Well, and then I know that I have to continue to pull out my obscure Superman connections. She was in the pilot for Lois and Clark. So she was the spokesperson for like the United Nations Space Station or something like that. So there you go, guys. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm here for. So.
There it is. If it's Superman, Zach is on it.
And so. I will say, look, if you guys are curious why we're kind of awkwardly talking about Stephen Collins, just go Google Stephen Collins if you're not familiar with relatively, you know, recent news about him, unfortunately, that has kind of, you know, put his career on the bricks. And, you know, he's kind of persona non grata these days. So
he went through a very nasty divorce and some pretty incriminating things were thrown at him from way back. From his past, I guess, and so either way, it's kind of icky. So we move on to The Wrath of Khan. So we have actually quite
this
a few.
This is a laundry
here.
List of people here in The Wrath of Khan. Yeah, you have Christy Alley, Paul Winfield, Merritt Buttrick, and B.B. Besh. And you know, I can speak to Christy Alley. Of course, everybody knows her from Cheers. Went on for years and years. She was not part of the original cast of Cheers. Was she? Was she added on later? I believe was that.
That's right.
The deal.
That's right.
Okay.
She took over after. The lead actress, I can't remember her name now, left, and she did great. I mean, she came in as Rebecca Howe.
Somebody pulled Denise Crosby,
Shelley Long was the other actress, and I think Shelley Long was on it for 4 or 5 years, and the show kept going. And when Shelley left to make movies and whatnot, her career just didn't take off as well as she thought. That happens a lot, too. You see that a lot with sitcom actors and actresses, but yeah, she came in and just killed it. But she actually made quite a few movies too before that came up. I mean, she did the Look Who's Talking films.
Yeah, John Travolta. That was a fun series. I remember watching that with my mom when I was a kid, and laughing about it. So.
I remember her in Summer School, which was another movie that was made with the lead from NCIS, Mark Harmon. Mm. And so she was pretty well known, and then, of course, you know, after all of that, she gained a lot of weight, and she was on a show called Fat Actress for Showtime or whatnot.
Yeah, well, she's like the spokesperson for Weight Watchers. Yeah,
she was for a while. Yeah, so she's had kind of a crazy life.
And we both saw her at Star Trek Las Vegas last year. One of the highlights, I think, because you know she has not done any Star Trek conventions since '82. So very insightful and very personable and just kind of very self-aware, you know, self-depreciating humor is, I always love that kind of stuff. So that spoke to me.
Yeah, I remember when she was getting an Emmy and she was trying to remember what her husband's name was. He was one of the original Hardy Boys and his name escapes me. But yeah, if you want to YouTube like a weird acceptance speech and the way she thanked her husband, it was pretty raw at the time. Funny as hell. I think she said something, I want to thank my husband for giving me the big one for all these years. And it just, the whole audience was like, what? She's known for being very cavalier and very funny, uh-huh. And that's just her way. So anyway, so Kirstie did very, very well. I would say definitely an A-lister. Uh-huh. And then we go to Paul Winfield and, he did a lot of movies, in the 80s.
I know him best for Darmok. Obviously, he goes on to play Darmok on TNG, so another appearance in the Trek family. And then outside of that, I know him from the Terminator, the original Terminator. There's a whole subplot that people forget about. Paul Winfield is a cop, and so is the guy from Millennium and Aliens, Lance Hendrickson.
Lance Hendrickson. That's
so they have a little subplot there. They're like partners and cops and stuff, and they get they get killed by Arnold Schwarzenegger, the Terminator. But that is what I know him best for outside of Star Trek. What about you, Ken? What were his great claims to fame outside of that?
I'm trying to remember the name of the movie he was in with Harrison Ford. He played a judge, and Harrison Ford was a PA. In fact, Brian Dennehy was in it. It was a murder mystery. He was Harrison Ford.
Was it The Fugitive?
No.
It was The Fugitive. I didn't think it was. I didn't kill my wife. I don't care.
I hate when things escape me like this. But it was a great movie. It was awesome. And Raul Julia was in it, and it was it was like one of these court dramas type of thing. But it was beyond that. Anyway, Paul Winfield played the judge in that, and he kind of turned the movie on its ear with the way the movie, the way it ended or whatever, was kind of focused on him, and it was really well done. But if you watch a lot of stuff from the 80s, you'll see Paul Winfield will pop up quite a bit. He did very, very well.
Yeah,
with career, I think he left us a few years back as well.
Had diabetes and he had a heart attack, and unfortunately, that's as we kind of go through the list here of our Star Trek II stars, that's an unfortunate recurring thing. A lot of them kind of died before their time. So Paul Winfield was in his early 60s, and then we go on to Merritt Buttrick, who died, gosh, not too long after, just less than a decade after Star Trek gave him some mainstream success. Now again. Returned to Star Trek family and the Next Generation. He was in the episode Symbiosis at the end of season one. So that's what I know him best for outside of Star Trek. But yeah, he had contracted AIDS and died not too long after all that. So
Square Pegs. Sorry. I don't know why I screwed it. But it was. He did, and like I said, it was the first show that really went in that direction. Freaks and Geeks, sorry, Judd Apatow, I remember that.
So you're telling me
Judd
Apatow stole this idea from a previous show in the 80s? Gosh.
Yes. No, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, absolutely he did. There's no doubt about it. Yeah. He was not the first, sorry. But that was still a funny show. And then B.B. Besh, actually, she was a pretty big star before The Wrath of Khan. She did a lot of soap operas, and that's where she was pulled from. And then, she went on to be in a big movie with Nick Meyer afterwards.
The Day After.
The Day After, yeah, which was a powerful, powerful movie. And, tough to watch. Even today, it's a tough, tough movie to watch. But, she was pulled into that. And she died, I believe, of cancer at a pretty
young age. Yeah, she had breast cancer. She died in her mid-50s. So, again, much like, Merritt Buttrick, 10, 15 years after Wrath of Khan, no longer with us. So, very unfortunate. And actually, she was another couple movies that I recognized from. She was in Steel Magnolias and also in Tremors, in the early 90s.
Oh, that's right.
So.
Yeah, which was a funny movie. Yeah. I enjoyed that movie. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So that's going to close the book on Wrath of Khan there. Another laundry list of celebrities from Star Trek III, Search for Spock. You get Christopher Lloyd, John Le Carré, and Miguel Ferrer. So Christopher Lloyd, he was famous before because of Taxi, TV. And I know a lot of people's criticism for him playing Klingon is like, oh, all I see is Reverend Jim. Well, someone who, you know, saw Star Trek first as a kid, I never made that connection for him playing a Klingon.
It was tough. It was tough. The audience in the movie theater laughed.
Get out of there.
It wasn't that. It was, you know, it was when he did his speech about coming throughout the whole movie, you wouldn't know it was Reverend Jim until he says, I've come a long way for the power of Genesis. And it was just Reverend Jim. It was, and you know, we all laughed at it, unfortunately, you know, and I kind of cringed. I just went, oh, I don't want people laughing at Star Trek. This isn't cool. But you know, he did a lot of things. He was a big TV actor back then. And then, of course, you know, Back to the Future.
Well, the next year, which is crazy. I mean,
it blew up.
Search for Spock, 84. And you think, oh, that's young Christopher Lloyd, you know, pre Back to the Future. No, the next year he was Doc Brown in 1985. And I think it throws off, I mean, I know it threw me off, like, how old is this guy? Because they age him up. He looks a lot older in Back to the Future because he's like the old crazy scientist guy. So that kind of throws off your perception of how old he is. But the next year, I mean, that's an iconic character that he still, like, reprises in, like, theme park rides and commercials. And, you know, a couple years ago was the 30th anniversary, so they made a big deal with Marty McFly, Michael J. Fox, and Christopher Lloyd were reprising their roles on, like, Jimmy Kimmel. And yeah, he's just a real talented guy, Christopher Lloyd. And, you know, also plays a great bad guy in Who Framed Roger Rabbit as Judge Doom. So just ahead and check that out. Check that out, guys.
I don't know if you ever saw Buckaroo Banzai, but he was in that too. One of the John Big Boutets. Anyway, he's done a ton of things, very, very successful. So yeah, I wouldn't say that Search for Spock launched his career, but you know, it was right just before he took off, right? Mm-hmm. And really became more and more popular. Now the next one is John Larroquette. Now John Larroquette,
Night Court, right?
Night Court, yeah, and then he wound up making quite a few movies after that, and he was actually in Stripes in 1980.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, he played the captain, the one who was chasing them down in Europe, but he was the commanding officer who was just a bumbling idiot. But anyway, that was the first role I remembered him from. Then, you know, things got quiet for him. He was in this role as a Klingon. I think he was the second officer.
Hey, he was
Maltz, such a thing.
The one guy left.
Yeah. Choni Choo. Anyway.
Fine, I'll tell you later.
That's right. And it wasn't a big role, but then Night Court came in and, you know, then obviously got connected with Brett Spiner because he was big in Night Court too. But yeah, and Larroquette, he was big in Boston Legal. He had a pretty sizable role as time went on.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Right.
I loved Boston Legal. Me and my roommate used to watch it in college and was like, man, this is like the 1980s reunion show, you know, with all these famous actors from the 80s and early 90s, you know, everybody coming together, not to mention all the Star Trek connections they brought in there. But
it was a lot.
I forgot that
Armin
they brought
Shimerman
him on
was
there.
In there.
Yeah.
Candace Bergen. Arjun
Benoit was the main character. I mean, oh my goodness. Anyway, I completely forgot that he was on Boston Legal. Good call out there, Ken.
Yeah, so he's done a lot. And then Miguel Ferrer, who wasn't a big role. I don't even know if he said anything. Yeah, he did. He was he was in the navigation station on the
Excelsior.
On the Excelsior. Yeah. Yeah. And Miguel Ferrer, he was also largely a character actor, a son of Jose Ferrer, who was a big time Hollywood star for many, many years. And you know, Miguel, most recently, I think, was on NCIS Los Angeles. That was his last role. But you would find him pop up in a lot of movies. He was in RoboCop.
Yeah, that's what I think I remember him best for is RoboCop. Yeah.
Yeah, that pretty popular in that.
But he was always like a shady government guy. You know, like in RoboCop, he was like a corporate guy with like, okay, questionable intentions. But most recently for me, I recognize him from Iron Man 3. He was the vice president. Who was, again, had shady deals going on under the table. So that seemed to be a recurring trend. Like, okay, we need kind of a shady guy. He looks trustworthy, but he's got stuff going on the table. Let's get Miguel Ferrer in here. So,
well, you know, he was also, you know, huge, huge successful movie called Hot Shots Part 2 as a Navy SEAL or an Army Ranger, a Special Forces guy who just could kill. And you know, then he finds his mojo again and kills lots and lots
well,
of bad guys.
But
anyway.
Before we move on, again, I must again bring up my obscure Superman or comic book references. There is a TV pilot for Justice League of America. It's from, I believe, 1997. It's garbage. It's one of the worst things ever put to film. But anyway, Miguel Ferrer plays the main bad guy, the Weather Wizard.
The Weather Wizard.
Okay. He's the main bad guy. The Justice League of America. By the way, there's no Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, or Martian. Oh, no, actually, there's Martian Manhunter in this. But it's played by David Ogden Steers, who goes on to be in Star Trek and was in MASH. So it's all connected, Ken. But anyway, I should have made that a game, like try to the 6 degrees of Superman or something. But that was when I was like, Miguel Ferrer is in this? Does he like have a summer home he's trying to pay for? What is he in this movie for? But anyway, it just really threw me off seeing him that. So, and you know, as we said, he passed away recently as well. So rest in peace.
Very recently. You know? Yeah, this year, right? Yeah. Okay. And then we go to The Voyage Home. Catherine Hicks, who we mentioned, was with Stephen Collins in Seventh Heaven for many years. She was also in the Chucky films.
Oh, yes. She was the mom in the Chucky films. Yeah. Which scared me so much when I was a kid. That is unsettling. Do not let your kids watch that until they're like 13, guys. There's a reason that is scary stuff. So.
So when you watch Monday Night Football with John Gruden, do you still get nervous?
Good call. Yeah, he does. He really does look like Chucky, I must say.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
But what a missed opportunity not to get William Shatner on Seventh Heaven. I mean, you had Stephen Collins, you had Catherine Hicks. I mean, it's like, this is a Star Trek movie, the TV show, right? So, just saying. Shatner was making TV appearances back then. Was he doing Rescue 911 around that time? So, they could have gotten him on there. Even Boston Legal, even, you know? Seventh Heaven ran for a long time, so.
It ran for a real long time.
Those kids, you see all those kids grow from, like, pubescence to, like, getting married themselves, so.
Yeah, I can't say I saw it very often, but I caught it a few times just because of the Star Trek connection. And, you know, back then anyway, before we knew that Stephen Collins was kind of a interesting character, that, it was fun to watch just because I like seeing them together.
Right.
It just reminded me of two movies that I really liked a lot. The other actor that was big in The Voyage Home, I mean, he had a small role, but a very powerful role, was John Shuck, and he played the Klingon ambassador. And John Shuck was big in the 80s in general. He
Starfleet violations. This is outrageous.
Mm-hmm. He did a lot of TV shows. He played a robot police partner. It was a terrible show, but it lasted for it was a sitcom, and he played a robot. And you know, you would see him pop up every now and then. And again, he reprised his role, I think, in Star Trek VI.
Correct, yeah.
He was back, yeah. But John Shuck, big character actor. You know, if you IMDb him, you'll see that he's got a lot of credits to his name, mostly in the TV genre area. I wouldn't say Star Trek, the Voyage Home, made his career by any means, but he really got a lot of accolades for that small role.
Well, as you said, it was a short role, but he made a huge impression. So
he did, and I think, you know, for a lot of us that knew him from the sitcoms that he did back then, surprised at his ability, and he really pulled it off. So
well, I know him as well from returning his Superman connections, and hey, he comes back in later Star Trek. He played a Cardassian in Deep Space Nine, I believe, it was in the Maquis. Two-parter on Deep Space Nine. He was a Cardassian official that comes to the station, talks to the crew there. So he did return to Star Trek, as many of these stars do.
Yes, they do. You can't get away. The Final Frontier, I really had nothing.
Oh, there is one, my friend. George Murdock, okay?
Well, yeah, he's there.
And he's there because, guess what, guys? He was a guest star on Smallville. Season 1, episode 6, Hourglass. He plays a serial killer who gets released from jail and released to a nursing home, and then he falls into a lake with kryptonite in it, and because his wheelchair is electric, he gets electrocuted, and the catalyst of that causes him to age backwards into the guy from Dumb and Dumberer, whose name escapes me, but the guy...
And it should, if you've actually seen that movie.
Jim Carrey fan, you know, so yeah. But anyway.
Dumb and Dumberer wasn't
He wasn't
Jim
in, Carrey. I know, it was the prequel, When Harry Met Lloyd. But anyway, all that being said, way too much trivia I shouldn't know going on right now. But anyway, George Murdock, famous for stuff. He was in a Twilight Zone episode back in the day, even before this. He was in the Dummy. He played the Dummy when the Dummy became a person. It's only one scene, but you know, kind of creepy. He was in Smallville. And then, of course, he, again, returning guest star to Star Trek, he played Admiral Hanson and the Best of Both Worlds two-parter on Next Generation.
Well, George Murdoch, if you see him as Admiral Hanson, I remember when he was in when that showed up in Best of Both Worlds, and I saw him, I was like, God, this guy's been in everything. He has been in pretty much. If there was a TV show that needed a heavy or whatnot, he was in it. Usually played a cop. He was very good at that. He played the doctor for the first season of Battlestar Galactica.
You're right. He was in that. Yeah, even John Colicos too. Yeah, okay, gotcha, got it, yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. So, I mean, he has been around, and it just goes back, and when we're putting this together, and I was like, well, George Murdoch, he's been around, and I saw the picture of him, and I went, oh my God, $6 million man. He goes back to the 60s.
Wow.
He was big, and if you look at his line of credits, it's like the guy has been working nonstop his whole career. So good on him. So that's why I was saying, well, there wasn't anybody that kind of got relatively unknown or just kind of breaking through for the Final Frontier. In fact, you would never know it was him. The voice, very indistinguishable, the makeup, the whole nine yards, but did a great job, I thought, and in a very tough role in a pretty rough movie. But at any rate, yeah, George Murdoch, I guess I shouldn't say big, maybe very long and very successful career, defined as, working actor. So.
And I'll say this before we leave Star Trek V. I think Lawrence Luckenbill did a great job as Cybok. And I think it's unfortunate that he's kind of thrown under the bus with the rest of the negative thoughts about that movie. I think he was good, and people say, oh, we should have gotten Sean Connery. I think that would have been distracting. I think Lawrence Luckenbill did fine for the role. I mean, really, Sean or Spock, I'm your brother. Like, you really want that going on in Star Trek? It's just too distracting. So, Shakari. So, anyway.
Yeah, hey, good swings at those. I agree. Lawrence Luckenbill is a big stage actor, right? He was known for LBJ and playing that role, and I think that's how he was discovered by Shatner. And pulled in. And I've seen him in different movies. He's shown up as a dad a few times in different. I can't remember off the top of his head, but he's very, you see him and you go, ah, Cybok. And,
it's
he
me.
Did a great.
It's Cybok.
I think I agree with you. His acting was fine. I mean, it certainly wasn't because of him that the movie wasn't successful. That's for sure. So I agree with you. Okay. The Undiscovered Country. Are we ready?
We are ready.
Okay, first one here, pretty popular, I think, at this time, had a very minor role, was Christian Slater, who I guess was lobbying hard to be on the set, and he was on the Excelsior, wakes up Captain Sulu. But Christian Slater back then was big. He was in all kinds of teen movies, and, he went on, his career kind of fell, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know what he's most famous for. I mean, of course, I know who Christian Slater is, and he's just one of these stars, like, oh yeah, Christian Slater, and then you think, what do I know him from? He's just around, he's in stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, he was with Travolta and Broken Arrow, and that was a pretty big role at the time. And, he would pop up, like I said, in a lot of those teen action movie type things. And he was in a movie fairly recently that took place in New Orleans, kind of made a comeback, so to speak. And so he's around. I know his mother was a famous casting director in Hollywood. So that's not a bad person to have for a mom if you're trying to be an actor in Hollywood, by the way. But and again, very, very, very distinct voice. I'm trying to think. He did another one where he was a radio guy doing a... I can't remember the name, but anyway.
I mean, he was in a couple of failed TV shows in recent years. One, like, it was kind of like a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, but he was a doctor, and it was, like, so terrible, like, they canceled it after, like, 8 episodes or something. his heyday really was the early 90s, because, I mean, I was thinking, like, what is he from? Okay, he was in Interview with the Vampire, he was in Robin Hood, he was in True Romance, so, I mean, he was in a lot of stuff, much like some of these stars we're talking about in the 60s, like, they're in Star Trek, they hit it big right after. And then they kind of like faded off as time has gone on. I feel like that's the way. But hey, he's not even 50 yet. I mean, Christian Slater was really young when he got famous. So I feel like there's plenty of time for him to have a, like a Matthew McConaughey McConaissance. We can have a Slater-sance at some point, right?
Sometimes they do come full circle, especially with all the different venues you have now with Netflix and Amazon.
Absolutely.
You would think you would have a pretty good shot. So we'll see. The other person from The Undiscovered Country, and she was popular when she was cast for this, but became much more popular as time went on, was Kim Cattrall. So she was, you know, Porky's was a movie she was famous for.
I forgot but that she was in Porky's. Yeah,
yeah, she played the cheerleader who howled, and
she was in Mannequin, that movie Mannequin, with the
that's
mannequin.
That's what I was just gonna say. That's right. So
kind of movies, you know, very, what a great resume.
Yeah, yeah, and she was always known for, you know, the risque roles and whatnot, and that's kind of what she took on. I know she was in a movie with Christopher Reeve as well. You know, Superman, right?
Was it Village of the Damned? That would be the only one I can think of.
No, it was one when he was in a wheelchair.
Oh, and then Rear Window, the remake?
I think so. Oh, okay. Yeah, where, you know,
you're calling out my Superman knowledge. I got to defend myself now. So,
yeah, she was the wife, and he, you know, was in a wheelchair, and turns out, you know, he was faking his his handicap, so to speak.
Are you sure about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember it.
Somebody let us know in the comments if Kim Cattrall was in a movie with Christopher Reeve. I doubt this. I think I would have found that before, but maybe you're right, Ken.
There's no maybe about it, okay? It's fact. He was in it. She was his wife, and that's the way it
all
was.
Right, Ken has now gone on the record, guys, so we'll see. Yeah,
this is absolutely true. I just wish I could remember the name of the movie and put it to bed. But at any rate, she, obviously, Sex in the City is where, you know, she became uber popular.
Right, yeah, we mentioned Sarah Jessica Parker earlier. This is the connection there. I mean, that show,
that's right.
Crazy success on HBO, two movie spinoffs now. I mean, it's, you know, everybody knows Sex in the City.
Yeah, yeah, and she obviously played the wild one, as she always tends to.
And that's what's so impressive.
I guess that is her personality, yeah.
That's what's impressive about her playing a Vulcan, the complete opposite, right?
That's right. And she did a great job as Valaris, too. That was a great role. And, you know, she's part of the Star Trek family. I guess probably popular enough where she's not doing conventions or anything. That'd be interesting to find out if she ever did. Because
The 25th anniversary was around that time. That would have been a time to pull her in if they had the opportunity, but I'll have to look that up. So,
yeah, well, you know, as creation keeps looking for more and more guests, it's interesting. You know, it was like, I don't know how many they have going to Las Vegas this year, 100 some odd, you know, 72 of them I don't recognize, but that's okay. You know, the rest of them is fine, but they do their thing. But yeah, she would be interesting to have Kim Cattrall, Robin Curtis, and Kirstie Alley all together.
The Savick panel.
Well, yeah. All right. I think we're ready to go into the reboots real quick.
The Kelvin timeline. Let's do it.
Star Trek 09, Chris Hemsworth played Kirk's father on the USS Kelvin, and he was relatively unknown.
Yeah.
I didn't recognize him when I saw the movie, and obviously his career has obviously gone pretty big with the character Thor in the Marvel universe, and he's done other movies as well, but I think that's probably the most popular one. But he is definitely an A-list star today.
Yeah, this guy is the epitome of what we're talking about. I mean, even if the movies aren't that successful, you know, it seems like he's in all these movies and he's a huge movie star. He has the most success playing Thor in all the Marvel movies. And I love his performance of Thor. He's hilarious. Right? He's just a great comedic time. He's perfect, you know, even though he's a superhero. It's not a comedy. It is funny. So the fish out of water stuff, so good with Thor. But, I mean, most of his other movies have not really caught on with people like, who's in the movie Black Hat, where he's a hacker. I'm like, yeah, like, this guy's a computer hacker. Give me a break. Heart of the Sea, you know, was the based off the real story of Moby Dick, kind of fell.
One of my favorite books, by the way.
Did you see the film? What did you think?
I haven't, and it's one of those things where the book was so great, and Nathaniel Philbrick, who's written some great books, all, you know, historical and accurate. Phenomenal author. If you like reading those things about, you know, Heart of the Sea or the U.S. expeditions and so forth and explorations back in the day, just incredible. He wrote a great book on General Custer that's fascinating. There's my tangent again. Heart of the Sea, for whatever reason, when it came out, it was supposed to come out. It was supposed to be a summer launch, a blockbuster type movie, and they kept pushing it back. That was a Ron Howard film, as you said, and then it got pushed sometime around Christmas, and I was afraid to see it because I was like, if it wasn't good enough, and it was very obscure, it didn't do well. So I know it was a very expensive movie to make. So I will catch it eventually, but it's one of those things where sometimes the book is so good, you're almost concerned to see the movie. I don't know if that makes any sense to you, but that's...
No, I totally understand. I sometimes I try... I usually try to read a book before I see like a TV show or a movie based off of like they have the Man in the High Castle right now. I read that book and now I can watch the show. And I want to read 11/22/63, the Stephen King book, before I watch the miniseries, just so I have some perspective, you know. But sometimes that's maybe you like the show better if you didn't know all the stuff they had to leave out. So I totally get what you're saying.
Yeah, well, there's occasions too where the movie's better than the book, right? I mean, if you ever read, again, we go back to Jaws. If you ever read the novel, it was kind of a
very different,
Great the premise was the same, but a lot of it didn't make a lot of sense, and a lot of stupid affairs and silly things. It was an okay novel, but its premise was so unique, you know, and they bought it so quick. And of course the movie made the novel even more popular. So it's just one of those things, but that's rare. Usually the books, because of the amount of detail you can put in them, are much better than the movies.
But, you know, back to Chris Hemsworth, they have tried to start many franchises with him. He's getting close to like Ryan Reynolds territory where it's like, hey, he's just not sticking. He works as a superhero. But outside of that, you know, Ryan Reynolds, he's found his you know, moneymaker in Deadpool. Chris Hemsworth has found his moneymaker in Thor. But movies like, you know, Snow White and the Huntsman, I mean, they tried to spin a franchise out of that. They got a couple movies. But I think the first one obviously made enough to make a sequel. That was actually one that Hugh Jackman was going to be in that he dropped out of, that Chris Hemsworth replaced him in. And now one movie I have not seen, but I've heard it's really good, is Rush, a race car movie.
I haven't seen Rush.
So yeah, that is a Ron Howard, Chris Hemsworth team up as well. So anyway, he's, you know, no sign of slowing down. I think that, you know, Marvel Cinematic Universe is going to keep going. He's going to keep playing Thor, and we'll see where he goes. But yeah, this is exactly what we're talking about. Like, Star Trek got this guy right before he blew up real big. So and just like George Kirk did in the movie. So
yeah, it's funny. You know, my wife isn't a huge comic book movie goer, any of that stuff. But funny, when Thor comes out, she kind of wants to see those movies. I can't imagine why. I just said, you know, honey, just picture me with long hair. That doesn't seem to do it. So anyway, what can I say?
Just so moving on to Star Trek Into Darkness, Benedict Cumberbatch. Now, this guy, really popular in the United Kingdom, obviously playing Sherlock Holmes. Now, but he is permeated pop culture. Now, he's everywhere. Now, isn't he, Ken?
He is. He is everywhere. And I think, you know, you can't deny that Into Darkness was extraordinarily successful. It was the most successful of the three reboot movies. And the irony of it all. And, you know, you'll find people that saw that movie with no Star Trek connections and absolutely loved it and loved him. You know, he has a great acting capability and a great voice. And you know what? He has a dynamic capability as well. I don't know if you saw Black Mass, but he played Bulger, not Billy Bulger, not Whitey Bulger, opposite Johnny Depp.
I did, yeah. And he was just a New York kind of guy. Like, I was very impressed.
Boston,
yeah.
Boston.
Oh, excuse me. Well, Boston. It's all the same to me here in Texas. So it's the Northeast. It's like that blue corner of the U.S. up there.
Yeah, you know, that's, Texas and Arkansas are exactly the same to me.
Oh, I see. Okay, all right, touche. I see your point. It's good, sir. I stand corrected. No, you're right, though. Black Mass was a really good film, and that's probably the thing I've seen the most of outside of, like, a genre thing, because he's in Lord of the Rings, he's in Doctor Strange, he's in Star Trek, he's in Sherlock Holmes, and I count all those as genres, and Black Mass is just like, hey, here's Benedict Cumberbatch in, like, a normal movie playing a part and not being like, they didn't hire him because he's Benedict Cumberbatch and he has this intimidating voice and this presence that works in these genre films, you know what I'm saying? So I agree with you on Black Mass for sure.
Yeah, and I wasn't sure why in Doctor Strange they didn't allow him to keep his accent. It, you know, because it's such a great voice, very distinct and distinguished. And I understand it's an American character, I guess. But man, it was one of those things. But it shows that he could pull it off, no problem. And we knew that from Black Mass, that, you know, he speaks very well, and whatever. It's kind of like Hugh Jackman, you know.
Right.
All of a sudden, the Aussie's gone. So he's a very talented actor, very distinguished voice, great presence. That's the thing. I mean, dang. You know, he's not a very big guy. He's kind of a skinny guy, but yet his presence is, you know, as far as Jonathan Harris, let's say, / Khan.
John Harrison.
John Harrison.
You make that mistake a lot,
I
actually.
Say all that time. I always say Jonathan, don't I?
Jonathan Harris.
John Harrison. Jonathan Harris.
Jonathan Harris is the guy that played Dr. Smith on Lost in Space.
Yes, he did. He certainly did. Yes, yes. Oh, the pain, the pain. Anyway, just he did a great job in that role for what it was, I thought. He just, yeah, if it was just another character, it would have been so much better. Uh-huh. And he I really thought he was you know, one of the few bright parts of the film, actually, was his acting ability. He was one badass. No doubt about it. Okay. And then I didn't come up with anybody in Beyond that I thought so far had been made popular. Maybe.
Well, Sophia Boutella, they're trying to.
So Sophia's coming around.
Because The Mummy, but that was a huge dead on arrival at the box office.
Wasn't a big part, was it? I mean,
well,
she wasn't.
She was The Mummy in The Mummy. So, I mean, I'm just saying.
Okay, so she had the role, I guess.
Title character. Yes, Tom Cruise is in it. Title character. They came over Tom Cruise movie, as I understand it, that's part of the problem. I loved the Brendan Fraser mummies, and I wasn't really too hot on this movie to begin with. But I was like, maybe I'll go check it out. And then the reviews were just awful. And I'm like,
did you see it?
No, I didn't. So.
Yeah, okay. I didn't see it either.
But, you know, she is in the Kingsman movies. So, you know, that's another franchise that she's involved in. Yeah. And hopefully that goes well for her because... you know, I think she was great as Jayla in Star Trek Beyond.
She was great.
And I hope she comes back, right? That's what we're all hoping for her to come back and fill the Chekhov role that's unfortunately been left vacant for all the movies moving forward. So,
and I guess we got the Idris Elba connection with Chris Hemsworth, right?
Thor, yeah. He was Heimdall in Thor, yeah. And then Idris Elba was already a big star before he was in Star Trek.
Big star,
so, yeah.
Yeah, he's done a lot of stuff before this movie. So, I did. You know, we'll have to see if there's any more of these highly made up younger junior officers that we did see in Star Trek come along.
No, I don't know his name of the actor or the character, but the most interesting man in the world, Dos Equis, he was a red shirt on Star Trek back in the day. I don't know what episode. I'm sure someone out there knows what I'm talking about. But there you go. There's a guy who everybody knows these days who wasn't the original series back then. I just thought of that just now. And he didn't die either. So, I mean, there you go. The most interesting man in the world. A red shirt on Star Trek doesn't die. Completely fits the MO of that guy.
Wasn't he just walking through a corridor or something?
He was there, Ken. He was there. He was on the set, on stage 9. Come on.
Well, that does make him pretty interesting. He's done it all, then.
He's done it all. We got to get him on standard orbit. That's what we need to do. So, if I can remember his name, maybe I'll go look it up and see what he wants to do. But anyway, yeah, that was a fun kind of trip down, you know, actor's past and actor's present and actor's future there. Yeah, you know, this was by no means an encyclopedic overview of everything. We obviously, you know, skipped over a lot of people. As Ken said, we were trying to zero in on people that were like, yeah, these are bona fide stars and that everyone would recognize of their era and even beyond their era. So, I mean, bottom line, Star Trek has a long line of successful talent coming through or just getting started here. And that's it's a proud tradition in the franchise that hope continues as the franchise continues.
If Earl Grey... If Earl Grey does this same subject, I think it would have to be a 2 or 3-parter.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
There's so many people that got their start in TNG from 87 to 94 that it's a very long list. And obviously a lot of those same stars or guest stars were in Voyager and Deep Space Nine as well, and some of them in Enterprise. But yeah, they have a very long list on the TNG side of the house, and I'd love to hear them take on a similar tasking, but I don't think they could pull it off in one episode.
Pace yourselves, guys.
Previously pace on yourself, Trek.fm.
Yeah.
The Orb.
That launched a lot of
It's kind of weird
no
if
doubt.
You walk into Picard's ready room.
All right, well,
and,
talking about,
you know,
Star Trek guest stars isn't the only
John
thing being
playing.
Discussed on Trek FM this week. Here's a quick look at what else
or
we might have missed elsewhere
Jewel.
On the network.
That would be really, really unexpected.
Oh, man, that's bringing it back right there. I can totally see him listening to the Pieces album.
To the journey!
But imagine how much his big black eyes would have popped if he was wearing the blue face paint.
That is true.
Like a bullion. I didn't realize the bullions were Scottish, but, you know.
Bullions could be Scottish.
Meta Treks.
Trip is just absolutely fascinated with the pan-fried catfish that this replicator can make, and... Archer doesn't want anything to do with it. He's pushing back against it. He doesn't trust.
What is it, like a Trojan catfish or something?
The Ready Room.
And then that makes you wonder, what does the Federation do when a member world shifts in that way and starts to take on characteristics that go against the foundation of the Federation charter in the first place?
Yeah, is there some sort of process for, like, removing a world from the Federation? if they go too far from Federation norms and values and ideals?
I think so. I think they hold a Fexit vote. So they decide that they are going to leave the Federation.
Yeah.
This is Stratos, though. It might be a Strexit vote.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcast. If you're an Apple user, get the show on iTunes or the Apple Podcasts app. Be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, Speaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course, you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well.
If you'd like to get in touch with us here at Trek FM, you can always find us on trekfm.com/contact and look in the sidebar on the show page, or you can go to speakpipe.com/trekfm and please leave us a voice message. You can also contact us through Twitter at trekfm or on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and of course in the Babel Conference. Type Babel Conference, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, or go to our website at Trek FM and click discussion on the menu bar. Another way you can help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week is to become a patron on the network on Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find the current goals and different milestone contributions along with all the great perks we have for you. These perks include early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, seats on our content development team, and more. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details on patreon.com/trekfm. Speaking of Patreon, thank you as always to our great associate producers for Standard Orbit. We have Renee Roberts, Norman Lau, Aaron Harvey, Tim Robertson, Nick Anastasio, Richard Marquez, and Corey Elrod.
Yes, thank you guys so much for your support for both Standard Orbit and Trek FM. So Ken, if people want to find you out there on the internet, where can they find you?
Hey, you can find me hanging around the Babel Conference and engaging people when I have the opportunity. You can also find me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @BostonSCPO, and we like to tweet out all our new episode information as soon as we get it, as well as our colleagues. So look for me there.
As for me, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreOnZach. And I'm also the host of my own podcast, Always Hold On to Smallville, where we talk about each and every episode of that Young Superman series from the early 2000s. And you can find us on Twitter at AlwaysMallville with one S. So thanks, everyone, for listening. And join us again next time here on Trek FM for another episode of Standard Orbit.